This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. It's Friday. You know what that means, right? Well, yes, that, but also the last 5 days wrapped up in six neat and tidy minutes from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdal. It is Friday today. As I said, this one is the 19th of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. What you wouldn't give, right, for a quiet week in this economy? Be nice. Sadly, that is not what we've got. Haven't had one for a while. So in we will dig. Jordan Holman's at Bloomberg. Sadeep Reddy is at Politico. Hey, you two.
Hey, Kai.
Hey.
So, Jordan, let me start with you, and let me start with your area of expertise, the consumer economy, retail sales, retail in general. Retail sales came out this week. BAFO is one word that might archaically be used to describe them. Here's my question, though. You talk to retailers, you talk to these companies. What are they seeing as they look at their consumers and how long this might be able to last?
So retailers are having a great week, especially the major ones. They are very encouraged by their sales, and they just see strong consumer demand going into the holiday season. We're 1 week out from Black Friday, which is the traditional kickoff of the holiday season. Yeah. And so when I was speaking to the CEOs and CFOs of major retailers like Macy's and Kohl's and Home Depot, all of them, they believe that consumer demand will be strong despite some of the concerns people have around inflation and just rising prices. But they don't see that chipping away right now. People look very poised to spend this holiday season. And we have some huge growth projections up to 10% over last year.
So, Sadeep, let me ask you this. Why are consumers feeling so willing to spend?
Well, that is a good question. Maybe things are normalizing a little bit. Maybe people feel like they haven't had a chance to shop before, and they're more eager to do it now. And it's not just stocking up on toilet paper. It's actually maybe gathering with friends and family for the holidays. There are all sorts of things that could be happening. But we are slowly getting into a more normal posture, seeing it obviously in slowly in the services economy. But people still like buying stuff, and we're collectively as a nation flush with cash. And so there's a lot of money that's just sitting in bank accounts that was saved up that is being deployed.
Jordan, let me ask you this. And look, I'll grant you it's a tad self-interested because I, too, am an American consumer and I like my discounts. Are we going to see any of this this holiday season, do you think?
I honestly wouldn't hold my breath, especially if you're looking for the like 40% off discount. So MasterCard came out earlier this week and said it's actually a seller's market for retailers, that they are in control right now. They're going to probably offer shallower discounts, especially on the items that are hot, like electronics, toys, those kind of things. And that's happening because right now, like Sadeep was saying, consumers want to spend. They feel good about it. But retailers have low inventory because I'm sure everyone has heard about the supply chain issues. So when you have those two elements, if you're a major retailer, you don't have that much merchandise and you know people are going to come spend with you, you don't have to discount. Yeah. And that's the approach that they're taking this year.
Yeah. All right, Sudeep, let me turn to your neck of the woods here for a minute. The House, I guess this morning, after a drawn out yesterday evening, passed President Biden's Build Back Better plan. But here's what I want to ask you. Much of the talk from administration officials and Democrats talking about this bill in the last number of weeks has been that it is, in fact, disinflationary, that it's not going to add to the inflation already in this economy. And I don't want to talk about the merits of that argument. What I want to know is, given where we are with inflation in this economy, do you think that disinflationary legislation is going to have to be the thing, much as austerity and deficit neutral legislation was the thing like 10 years ago coming out of the financial crisis? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, they're going to have to come up with that argument, if nothing else, than to win over Joe Manchin in the Senate and pass this bill, because one of Joe Manchin's concern is about the pace of inflation, and he is like set this out as one of his lines that he's going to have to consider about what actually passes in the Senate from this package. And so this is probably we all debate what transitory actually mm-hmm. means, but this is probably a thing that's going to last for much of the next year in parts of the economy. Obviously, some prices will not go up as much as others, but overall, inflation is going to remain somewhat elevated and is going to keep this angst hanging over us. But there's probably not a whole lot of additional legislation that's going to pass beyond this one. So that's really the question. But the Biden team is trying to argue that this is anti-inflationary, and a lot of this is just kind of hogwash. Like, there are pieces of it that obviously are, some of it will wash out with other things that are inflationary. And it's a long-term bill that will just like infrastructure, will probably have longer-term effects. This isn't like showering cash on people like we did earlier this year, which was part of the problem that exacerbated the inflation issue.
Yeah. Sudeep, real quick, just sorry, one more thing on this bill. I thought it was interesting that the White House and Democrats are relying on increased tax collection to get it to actually cost zero, right? They want to beef up the IRS and collect more in what's known as the tax gap, right? They're not saying, as the Republicans did with the Trump tax cuts, they're not saying, hey, this is going to grow the economy. It's not dynamic scoring, right? They're just going to do nuts and bolts, get more money in the bank.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of taxes that are not being collected out there, and there's creative accounting that the tax code allows. Rich people are doing this all the time. That's part of the life. And this idea of empowering the IRS to collect what actually is expected of the law is now somehow being debated as un-American in some way,
right?
When it's policy. It's what the law should be supporting. And the IRS just isn't equipped to do that. Obviously, it's going to be the big talking point for Republicans coming out of this. But it has a very different political calculation from the economics of it, and that's the usual thing for Washington, of course.
Of course. All right. 30 seconds on this next answer for each of you. Jordan, you get to go first. Here's what I want to understand based on how you see this economy. Explain to me the disconnect, Jordan, between the headlines where things are growing, the job market is tight, and it's a job seeker's market. That's good, but everybody feels lousy about the economy. How come?
Because they see what's happening right now. Like, you drive past the gas station, gas is high, you go to the grocery store, meat is expensive, and a lot of the economic indicators are trailing. Like, the retail mm-hmm. sales this mm-hmm. month was from October. So we don't really have a clear picture on what it feels like for folks right now. And that's probably why we're hearing that consumer confidence is low.
Sudeep Reddy, last 30 seconds to you. Same question.
This all comes down to national anxiety. We all have it in some way about whether you're still working from home, whether you're wearing a mask in areas because the pandemic is still on, whether you're staring at a gas price sign, or you're worried about the price of bread. Right. Like, all these things are the things that weigh on us, and you put them together, it's hard to look ahead when all of this is kind of in this brew and see that, you know, things are actually better than they were a year ago. And until we can overcome that scale, that weight that's on us, it's going to be hard to see a lot of these numbers improve on the state of consumer confidence.
Sudeep Reddy at Politico, Jordan Holman at Bloomberg. Thanks, you two. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Kai.
Have a good weekend. On Wall Street today, You know, look, I'm going to remind you again, the virus is in charge. Europe is not great. You heard about that. The dollar and the bond market have noticed for sure. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We talked a little bit, Sudeep and Jordan and I did at the end right there, about how we're feeling about this economy. Not great, obviously, is the TLDR. And that makes this prediction by the National Retail Federation a tad perplexing, that holiday spending, as Jordan said, is going to jump by as much as 10.5% this year. That is despite all the higher prices and supply chain agita that's going on. So ahead of next week's report on consumer spending from the Commerce Department, Marketplace's Justin Ho made some calls today on this topic.
A little over a week ago, Jack Kleinhens bought a bunch of toys for his three grandchildren. Legos, magnetic tiles that you can build things with, and some toy cars made out of interlocking plastic pieces.
Things that they can rebuild and be creative and make new things out of, rather than using the same thing over and over again.
When he's not shopping for toys, Kleinhens is the chief economist at the National Retail Federation. And he's found that consumers are eager to spend money right now, thanks to higher savings rates, government relief, and rising wages. In fact, he says the toy store he visited had already been gearing up for a busy season.
I was told that they had anticipated some of this extraordinary demand. Their inventory was up considerably.
In Buffalo, New York, Tracy Mangano says she's been doing her shopping early because she says those inventories might not last. Mangano owns a gift shop called Card Smart Greetings, and she's been dealing with clogged inventory pipelines herself.
Some of the products we're supposed to get for the Christmas catalog aren't coming in until the beginning of December, which in that case is kind of late.
That's why this year, Virginia-based jewelry store owner Sophie Blake says she'll do her shopping in person.
Like, I've heard so many people say, oh, I've ordered my furniture for my new home, and it's going to take 6 months to get it.
Either way, Blake says she expects holiday sales this year to reach levels we haven't seen since 2019, before the pandemic. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
Speaking of pandemic, more boosters are clearly on the way. Today, a CDC panel recommended third doses of Pfizer or Moderna for everybody over the age of 18 who'd gotten the first two. One-shot J&J people, they've been eligible for a while. Also, kids 5 to 11 are lining up for their shots, which means local pharmacies are real, real busy. And that gets us to this. CVS said this week it's going to turn more of its stores into destinations for healthcare services like vaccines and screening tests, even as it closes hundreds of branches where traditional sales have declined. Walgreens is investing in more primary care clinics at its stores, too. And one of the things that's become clear during this pandemic is the promise of retail locations in meeting everyday health needs that we have. Also, though, made clear some of the challenges, as Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino reports.
When Alex Maki booked her flu shot recently, the local Walgreens in Sarasota, Florida, seemed like the best choice.
Trying to get in to see a doctor is a huge challenge.
But when she showed up, the pharmacy corner was overwhelmed. Technicians were working the drive-through COVID test window while answering phones, while collecting prescriptions.
The tech I talked to just had a lot going on.
CVS has been on a hiring spree, adding 25,000 new roles in September. But the pipeline isn't getting bigger fast enough, says Veronica Vernon, a professor of pharmacy practice at Butler University. Enrollment in pharmacy programs has dropped over the last decade, and there's increasing competition for staff from mail operations like Amazon, where it's often less stressful than in public-facing jobs.
It's been challenging to find folks to fill these roles. They don't want to have to be answering phones all day or dealing with insurance all day.
Expanding healthcare services will only mean more of that kind of work, says health management professor Robert Field at Drexel University, which is a Marketplace funder. Pharmacies will need more capacity for billing, managing medical records, and just more private space.
I think people are not going to be comfortable dressing down and putting on a gown while other people are shopping for their Tylenol and toothpaste.
There should be room to shrink those Tylenol and toothpaste displays, though, as more people buy those products online. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Restaurants, as we know, have taken a huge hit during the pandemic, and that's had an immediate impact on the obvious players in the food service ecosystem, the servers and the hosts, bartenders and cooks. But the ripple effects of a trickling recovery in the restaurant industry are being felt farther out than we might have expected. Here is today's installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Megan Buchholz. I am the founder and chief tasting officer of Local Table Tours, a boutique food tour company that explores the food scenes in Denver, Boulder, and Fort Collins, Colorado. I bring people on guided walking tours. So we go to a restaurant, maybe paired with a bartender's choice tasting, and do that again in another place and another place, and we end with dessert. I've always been interested in food, and I've always been an avid home cook. And in Colorado, we have a burgeoning food scene. And so everything, year after year after year, was just growing. I worked with more than 90 establishments and had different types of tours, private events, birthday parties, corporate gatherings. But it gave me no indication that that was going to go backwards after steadily growing for a decade. March 14th, here in Colorado, everything closed. So I ended up refunding people and thinking we're on a holding pattern. I did have an incredibly slow year that was not profitable at all. So that put me back until the spring of 2021. But I wasn't able to hit the ground running. 45 of my featured establishments had closed permanently. So many others had changed their hours. They were short-staffed. There was all these other issues, like if there weren't enough truck drivers, the restaurant wouldn't have their food delivery. So it was very much different from properly planning what you were doing in advance. It was very much like fly by the seat of your pants to give people the best experience they could have, considering the circumstances that everything was so messy. Currently, my numbers are nowhere near what they were in 2019, but I anticipate being about three quarters of the way there, assuming nothing shuts down again. And I've just been taking it week by week, figuring out who can be featured and just trying to make it work without being a burden.
That's Megan Buchholz out in Colorado, doing those food tours. You know, we cannot do this series without you, so let us know how your economy is doing, would you? There's a place you can do that at marketplace.org/myeconomy. Coming up.
By some accounting, they were burning $1 million a month.
Oh, yeah, that's not good. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's down 268 today, 0.7%, 35,601. NASDAQ up 63 points, 0.4%, finished at 16,057. The NASDAQ above 16,000. S&P 500 off 6 points, about a 0.1%, 46.97. For the 5 days gone by, the Dow gave back 1.3%. NASDAQ grew 1.2%. S&P 500 advanced about 0.3%. As you might expect, makers of COVID-19 vaccines moved higher today on the news. Moderna climbed 4.9%. Pfizer dipped about 1.1%. Johnson & Johnson edged up 0.3%. Bond prices rose. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note down to 1.54%. No, I don't know what's going on. You're listening to Marketplace.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Gusto. Let your employees know you've got their back by signing up for Gusto for payroll and HR. More than 300,000 small business owners use Gusto. They offer benefits like health insurance, employee onboarding, and more. Get your payroll taxes filed, deductions calculated, and your team paid fast. No more pain. Just the joy of running your business. Get 3 months free when you go to gusto.com/marketplace. That's gusto.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. You got your campaign promises, and then you got your governing realities, and that disconnect has jumped up and bitten the Biden administration right on the nose. This week, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management auctioned off $192 million worth of new oil and gas leases in the Gulf of Mexico, 1.7 million acres in all, going to Exxon and Shell and Chevron and some others. The bite on the nose part is that blocking new oil and gas leases on federal lands and in federal waters was one of the president's climate campaign promises. And he did, for a bit, right after he took office, block those leases. But this summer, after more than a dozen states sued, a federal judge in Louisiana said, yeah, no. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has the business and climate context.
Companies won't actually start producing oil and gas on the acres they bought this week for a while, probably 7 to 10 years.
And that's exactly when we need to be well along the way of moving away from a fossil fuel energy economy.
Drew Caputo is an attorney with Earth Justice, a public interest environmental law firm that is suing the Biden administration over the sale.
These sorts of forward-looking, large infrastructure investments in oil, gas, they're really dangerous for the planet.
For a president who's trying to take more aggressive action on climate change,
the optics on this aren't great, but honestly, it won't make a ton of difference.
Samantha Gross is director of the Energy Security and Climate Initiative at the Brookings Institution. The reason she says it won't make a ton of difference for the climate?
As long as someone demands oil and gas for whatever they're using it for, someone in the world will produce it.
And right now, there's still huge demand for oil and gas in the U.S. and globally.
It's going to take the world a while to move away from oil in particular. Oil overwhelmingly dominates the transportation sector, and it's difficult to replace.
Reducing demand for oil in transportation and the rest of the economy would make a much bigger difference than blocking new oil and gas leases, says Ryan Kellogg, a professor of public policy at the University of Chicago.
That means incentives and technology development to develop alternative modes of transportation away from the cars and trucks that we're used to.
And it means doing that at scale, he says, in a way that can be exported to the rest of the world. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Here are some words one might fairly use to describe the past 20, going on 21 now, months for the movie business. Uncertain, pushed back, delayed, delayed repeatedly. From James Bond to Black Widow to Dune, just about every major movie released this year has seen some kind of delay. And time, as they say, is money. A lot of money. Chris Lee wrote about the hidden costs of holding movies for Vulture. Chris, thanks for coming on.
Hey, nice to be here, Kai.
I want to ask you about this line from your story, and it's the reason we're talking to you. No one is entirely sure how to measure the exact dollar amount that has been lost, other than to say it's a gargantuan multi-billion dollar sum. That's quite something.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of money that's been lost in the pandemic and all these various delays in these films. You used to never see giant blockbusters being pulled off the release date, basically at the 11th hour. It would almost be the equivalent of a battleship being, you know, turning a 180 in the middle of the ocean. But, you know, oceans of cash have been burned trying to promote films that don't come out for months or years. Careers have been put on hold. Nobody can really put a dollar amount on what has been lost to date.
Yes to all of that, but a Bond film is a Bond film is a Bond film is a Bond film. And James Bond is always going to get people to go to the movie theaters. No?
Yes and no. So No Time to Die is the 25th James Bond film. It has taken in $709.2 million worldwide. Mm-hmm. It's the fourth biggest movie overall to open. It's the third highest grossing Bond film in history. And yet, it doesn't seem like it's going to reach profitability.
That's crazy. Now, is that just, I mean, we've all heard the stories about the shall we say, creative accounting that Hollywood uses to avoid paying out X, Y, and Z person. Is that what's going on here?
Well, the Bond film is unlike almost any other movie on the release calendar this year, insofar as it has so many promotional partners. When it got postponed for the first time in March of last year, by that point, they had already spent $5.6 million on a trailer that aired during the Super Bowl. Hmm. Then when they were going to release it around Thanksgiving of last year, they cranked up another $65 million into the pipeline to promote it. So they held the movie three times overall. And by some accounting, they were burning $1 million a month in financing costs. You know, the company that's releasing the movie, MGM, borrowed cash to finance No Time to Die, which it couldn't recoup until the movie arrived in multiplexes. And you know, because of that delay, S&P Global eventually downgraded MGM's credit rating from a B+ to a B for sustained high leverage as a result of ongoing theatrical delays.
Okay, so if it's tough out there for Bond in pandemic and delays and all of that, if you're some, you know, not even small indie, but sort of mid-market-ish kind of movie, you're just sunk, right?
I mean, getting market share at a time where it seems like one month people are happy to go back to the multiplex and another month they're totally spooked, it's definitely harder for those smaller movies. The most successful movies of the year, Shang-Chi and The Legend of Ten Rings, Venom, Let There Be Carnage, Black Widow, they all were held. But now that they're flooding back into the multiplex, that's sort of to the exclusion of some of those smaller and mid-level movies that you're mentioning.
Play this forward for a second. Is it just going to be a wild, wild west out there for a number of years until things settle a bit?
Well, I think what you're seeing is that movies can still make an enormous amount of money, but I think studios might not be able to hold their way to a blockbuster. They can maybe hold their way to profitability or close to profitability. Yeah. But things are going to be messed up for the next who knows how long.
Chris Lee at New York Magazine also writes for their site Vulture, most recently about movies and getting held and what that means. Chris, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time and your reporting.
Many thanks, Guy.
This final note on the way out today, in which how you measure makes a difference. The American Farm Bureau Federation said this week, Thanksgiving dinner is going to cost 14% more this year than last, which makes sense. Inflation and all that, as we've been telling you endlessly. But this from economist Betsy Stevenson at the University of Michigan, also a former Obama administration official and frequently cited source for public radio reporters far and wide. This is interesting. She points out that in terms of how many hours a blue-collar worker had to work to pay for Thanksgiving dinner, last year was the lowest cost on record. All right, we got to go. No moment of economic context today. I just went too long in the rap with Sudeep and Jordan. My bad. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassid is the managing director of news. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.